All right. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. As we were introduced, we are, I'm Jake, this is Paul and Julia, and we're part of the Pizza and Side Hugs, a youth ministry podcast. Now, we do this podcast, we've been doing it for a little while, and less because we're on the scene or like big name presenters or anything like that, and more that we have always enjoyed the three of us talking about youth ministry. It's kind of like talking shop for us, right? We've been doing ministry for a while. We love to talk to other people about it, and we like to have fun while we do that. So this is Pizza and Side Hugs, and we love youth ministry conversations. And so this is a little bit different format today to try to make that happen. We're still going to try to have conversations, even though it's the large group setting.
Yeah, but we can interrupt one another.
Yes.
We do love to interrupt one another.
Great.
And you may see some personality quirks coming through even just today.
What do you mean?
You guys just have to wait and see. So,
what we're talking about today, when we talk about company and small group, you're not going to get a program. We're not selling you a program at the end. Our belief is that good ministry is about people, not programs. Really is. It's the people. Now, we can have good programs. You need curriculum. You need to have a way you're going, a vision, a journey. But the people are the most important thing. So when we talk about accompaniment today, we're going to talk about principles, five principles that we believe the people who are in your ministry need. Because it's about people, not programs. Like I often say, how many people use Chosen, like the confirmation program? Have you heard of it? Great program, Chris Stefanik. But the thing I always say is, you think Chris Stefanik takes his high school kids that are getting ready for confirmation and looks at them like, I'm going to get you ready for confirmation. I am. Now what I want you to do is I want you to go into this room and watch a TV of me speaking. No. You know, he takes them, I don't know what he does, but I have this vision of Chris Stefanik, this epic guy, taking his kids up a mountain or something, and then up there talking about Elijah. I don't know if he does that. But what we're talking about here is it's so important. So often we're looking for the right program, or we stop at a thematic booth and we hear a great program that someone has, which is awesome. But we can't be distracted about the formation of people. The formation of people is what is key, and that's what we want to talk about today.
Great. So we're going to talk through these five principles with you. And again, these are like things that we've learned from being real youth ministers. So I want to start with something that's profound and is really going to blow your minds as our first principle. Show up. We were talking beforehand about the wisdom of the folks up here and all we were going to share. And this is what we came up with, is that you would show up for your students. But really, I think this is underrated. So I want to take you to one of my ministry events, our confirmation retreat every year. We get all these students who come, and it's the mandatory retreat, so they're all very excited to be there. And then on the last day of the retreat, we actually invite parents to come in as well. And so their parents show up, and then we even have these confirmation mentors that are there, and the priest is there, and everybody in confirmation is all there on one day, and there's 180 people. And that sounds like really great in theory. And then you, as the people who plan these sorts of things, understand that on the day of, you are totally stressed out, right? I'm like, what is going to be said today? I hope this doesn't make parents mad or upset my priest or something like that. And one of these times, we had a student named Carl. And Carl was our MC for the weekend. So he's a senior, very much a leader. And he got up, and the MC gives a talk in front of all the students and all the parents and this whole big crowd. And this is really exciting. Also, I'm a little nervous in the back.
A little nervous.
Right? Like,
a little nervous.
Like, I know he's going to be good. Just don't say a heresy, right? Like, don't do that sort of thing. So Carl is getting up there. He's speaking to everyone. And he takes it to everyone in the room. And he says, listen, I was not into this. And my parents made me show up week after week. And because I was showing up, I started to get something out of this. I started to realize people cared about me here. And so he gives his sort of testimony, and then he said, takes it to everybody else. And he says, so you confirmation students, I don't really care what you've thought of this so far. You need to continue to show up. And then he takes it to the parents. And he says, parents, him as an 18-year-old, parents, you need to show up as well. Your students, your kids need this example. And I'm in the back thinking, this is kind of awesome. And I'm also I'm sweating just a little bit. And he even takes it to us on the team. And he says, team, volunteers, youth ministers, you need to show up as well. And I was very taken aback by this whole presentation. It was incredibly well received because Carl was the kind of guy that could put that forward because he walked the talk with that, I think. But it was this rather powerful thing that sticks with us. And this is often a mantra of our ministry now, is you need to show up for people. Now, when we're talking about small groups, what does that mean to show up? I guess there's the obvious of you have to be there for people. But instead, we kind of broke this down into three different subpoints. So one of those is to give thought. This means when you show up to a small group, it's not just that extra thing you're doing on the youth ministry night, right? You come in, one, as prepared for that. And I think the more prepared you are for a small group, the more organic it feels. And two is...
Which is reverse what you think, right? You think if you're prepared, you're going to want to be, you know, very sterile and, like, want to go through every point. But the more you prepare, the more you can be have freedom because you know what's coming up next.
Yeah, and maybe you're like us that a lot of times what you spend your time on preparing for youth ministry or for small group are the
is
talks.
Never what they want.
Yeah, is the activity that you're going to do. You're trying to find that perfect activity that's going to make everyone feel engaged. In fact, it's the small group questioning, the little things of that group, how you're going to have that discussion. That's what you need to be prepared in, is what kind of questions would I want to answer? And you also need to be a prayerful person to show up to that as well, that you are not using your small group as your one opportunity for prayer in the week. That also means we want you to be consistent. And I think sometimes small group leaders go into a small group thinking, this is going to be a little tough for me. I am not the dynamic person that works with teens. I am not that youth minister who's up in front of everyone and can engage everyone in that way. And that's not what teens really need, is it? Instead, they need someone who's reliable, who's consistent, who's just themselves, even if that's an old parent, and that's the person that just shows up for them week after week, and they always know that's going to be the person who's there for them.
And that is hard.
Yes.
Like that, to be consistent is hard, and that's a high bar to ask from people because, you know, you want people, right? You don't want to, if someone says, I've got conflicts, I'm not going to know if I can make it. You're like, well, just come when you can. What we're saying is you got to think about that statement, come when you can. Because when, even though they're trying the most that they're trying, if they only come when they can, they're not consistent. That consistency is so key. And so maybe this year isn't the year for them to be a small group leader. Maybe there's another role for them to be. But we need consistency with our youth to truly accompany them.
Some of the single friends my age kind of have this funny mantra about if they find a young person or a person they'd like to date, the like
not a youth in their small group.
Correct.
Okay, just clarifying. When you say
we
a young
want you
person
to show
to date,
up, yeah. But not like that.
Okay.
Boundaries. Boundaries.
Yeah, we'll talk about boundaries.
Survey at the end, guys.
No, but the metric, the litmus test is, does he call when he says he's going to call? And that I somehow is pretty difficult to do for some people. And so this is, but are you as a small group leader, do you show up when you say you're going to show up? Do you, if you say you're going to follow up on a question, do you actually do that? Are you accountable to what you said you were going to do? And then the last piece of that is to make an impact. And so this is a... We talk a lot about impact recognitions in our small groups. So what does that mean? I think that means that you are recognizing students in a way that is outside the norm. Like they might raise their eyebrows in surprise that you show genuine care and interest in them. So, for example, we had a student several years ago. He was on the basketball team. He wasn't super involved, but some of us were going to the basketball games anyway. So we started going to the local high school basketball games. He would come out and talk to us afterwards, and I think that surprised him, that people from his church would be found outside of his church, sort of like seeing your teacher in the supermarket. You know, it's a little bit, it surprises you. You're not sure that person's going to be there. And then
your
once
teacher
started,
in tennis shoes, you're like, wait, what? You don't wear nice shoes all the time?
I thought you just slept here. Right. And so this is... We started with this. Then he, he started coming to youth ministry, and he mentioned that he was in this calculus class, and he really was struggling. And he kind of had that like question about him, like, "Do you think you could help me with that?" And in my head, I was thinking, "Absolutely not. I could not help you with calculus."
nope.
However, you know, I was trying to, be there for this young person. So he would come to visit, and we started working on calculus, and I brought some of the other students who were smarter than me to help with that. And so we, even though this wasn't necessarily ministry related, this student had something that was going on in his life, and we responded to it. And it was something that I think kind of surprised him. He wound up getting super involved in our ministry, later became a youth minister himself. They don't always have the greatest success stories like that. We had another student that we tried to make an impact recognition because she never showed up. So her older sister got really involved. And we thought, great. Her older sister loved this. We're going to have this young person involved in our ministry. And so we checked in with her at the start of the year, sophomore year, when it came time for confirmation. And then we didn't hear anything. So we checked in again a couple months later. And then I even like called her mom to talk about it, because that's the sort of thing we do when somebody doesn't answer. And so we start doing these different things to check in. I checked in about every few months for 2 years. This girl never came to anything, but I just thought, man, if she just knew that we cared, maybe she would come here. And sure enough, finally, senior year, she signed up for a retreat. She had an amazing experience, got confirmed in the spring, and now is going to be back leading that retreat this fall. And so these are the sorts of impact recognitions we want to make. And it's something that we're asking everyone to do. I know these sound like the youth minister thing where you go around, but it's really the small group leader thing, that if you're going to be a small group leader, you find ways to do this. And there are small things going on that you can do. Right now on this conference, I have two chaperones with our group. One of them knows one of the students who's a swimmer really well, and so he's trying to organize people to go to one of the swim meets. It's not going to take a whole lot of time for him to do that, but I think it's going to make a major impact on the student. We have another who really loves to, she's got like a whole collection of prayer cards, and so she sends prayer cards to the families of students, not just that she has in small group this year, but that she had the last 2 years as well. That's something she likes to do. It doesn't take a whole lot of time, but when a student or a family gets those sorts of things, it makes an impact on all of them. And the next time you call and you say, I have this really great opportunity for you to come to, our voice carries a lot more weight because we've recognized them in impactful ways.
Because it's so much easier for one small group leader to keep in touch with 5 to 10 people than it is for a youth minister to keep in touch with 100. You can get there and you can say hi to them. You go, hey, Caitlin, hi, Matthew, hi, Alex, when they walk in the door, but you will not know those students as well as their small group leaders are. And that's one of the challenges there, is if they're making those impacts, it's not less work for you, but it's more of a reach. Like, you are getting deeper with more people by making impacts through small group leading.
We're talking about five people. So if you're an adult at your parish, there are five kids you can have this kind of relationship with. So if you're like, well, we're a small parish and we only have 10 and I'm that person, I would still say you need more people.
Absolutely.
It cannot just be you. To do this is a lot. We're saying a lot of things here, but you got to get a lot of people on board. And many hands make light work, I promise you. And people are scared to do it, but we are made for community. We're made for relationship. And we all know this in this room, that when people start doing this stuff, they become alive. And they see the power and the impact it has. But it is hard work.
Yeah, and last thing about showing up is we have a little working theory. We call it the rule of three, that if you were to make 3 impact recognitions for a student, they would have no doubts. They could not overcome the idea that you genuinely care for them, that you want them to be a part of their faith community. That can be hard to do, and sometimes it's a nice thing to say. So we actually started charting it, too. So
there's nerd.
Yes. Maybe you're the spreadsheet nerd. You are my people, and I love that. And you start tracking these things. There's a board outside my office right now where our core team leaders can put a little note in the door that says how they made an impact recognition or saw somebody else do that. And we have a goal of getting to 100 for the year that we'll celebrate if and when we get to that. And so these are things worth celebrating. This is what a win looks like, is that even if a student doesn't get super involved or come to understand their faith just because of 3 impact recognitions, there's no doubt that if they ever wanted to come back later, they would have a feeling that the church cares for them.
Woo!
Yeah, so that's our first principle. Yeah, Jake gets a round of applause. That's a high bar.
Oh, yeah.
I better get you guys standing by my time. No.
I think I'm going to leave.
So that's our first principle. We call it show up. Our second principle, I really believe in, and I think it's truly important, and it's called partner with parents. We believe, just like every other principle that we talk about, that this is essential. Partner with parents. And when we say that, we want us to become, our small group leaders to become allies with the students' greatest influences, right? What parent, right, when they have their small little child, when they bring that child in the world, whether it's their first, their second, or my wife and I have been blessed, we're going to welcome number 5 in June. Praise God. Pray for Alexa. she and me, but she's doing all the work right now. When we welcomed Luke into the world, we didn't know how crazy the next 9 years would be with this kid. But when we looked at him, we didn't look at that little tiny baby and say, man, I can't wait to mess this thing up. I really want to be I just want to be a horrible parent. And sometimes when we're in youth ministry and we're trying to work with parents that are trying to juggle so many things in their kids' lives, and we see that church is maybe not the priority that it needs to be, we feel as though they're looking at their kid and wanting to screw their kid up. Sometimes it's hard to partner with parents. At my church, where I was a youth minister for a number of years, the pastor at our parent confirmation meeting, which is the best meeting all year, the pastor would always get up and he would say, "At your child's baptism," dramatic pause, "you stood before the font and you said that you would raise this child in the faith. It is your responsibility. You are the primary catechist of this child." How many people have heard the term primary catechist before? Mm-hmm. Oh, what?
That okay. was a great impersonation.
I think that's spot on. I agree with them completely. Okay, now let's take that term. If they're the primary catechist, if they're the primary formators, how many of our parents' budgets look like that? How much money are we spending on forming the primary catechist? How many times are we trying to work with the primary catechist? Most of the time, as parish staff, as parishes, we're not trying to necessarily partner with parents. We're trying to partner with small group leaders. We're trying to partner with the programs that we're doing. We're not trying to partner with parents, not telling parents what to do. Okay? Parents, over time, learn how to parent their child. And every child's different. I'd say that funnily, but they are. Every child's different. And this parent knows it. Right? Maybe the parent isn't on the faith page where we want them to be. But I tell you what, they're on their child's page. They care about that child. What if we started partnering with parents about them just being a good parent? Now, yes, we're going to talk about the gospel. We're going to talk about the resurrection of Jesus Christ and what the good news means for their child and, more importantly, for them. But first, we have to partner with them. We have to meet them at the well, if you will, and hear their story. And how can we help them? And this is not just a job of a pastor. This is not just a job of a youth minister. We believe it's a job of everybody. So we're talking small group leader in a ministry like that. We're talking about confirmation catechist. That's your job as well. Because at that baptism, and I just talked too much. I took that. That's not true. I did not take that. But that'd be cool if I did, right? If you're ever looking for cool photos like that, unsplash.com. Unsplash.com, I can't remember what this guy's name is, but they have a ton of like epic, high-resolution Catholic pictures that like your youth will love in your presentation.
They're
so
awesome.
Unsplash.com. So when we talk about how we break down partner with parents, it is this way. First of all, you're not a secret agent. At my parish, when I was a youth minister, I would always go to all the Christmas liturgies because I would find people. I would actually see people. Right? I would actually see parents of these kids who I had never seen before. And I was that crazy youth minister who would go to like all masses one weekend because I didn't have as many kids then. But at these Christmas liturgies, like the 4:30 where, you know, you normally have, you know, maybe 600 people at mass, and for 4:30 Christmas Eve, you have 1,400 people and you got to bring in the chairs and the maintenance guy is grumpy because he knows what's coming already by like, you know, when we start the antiphons, he already is getting grumpy because he knows that Christmas is going to be crazy. But I see people like, oh, that's Johnny's parents. But what I didn't do is I didn't go over and meet Johnny's parents. I would stand over here and be like, oh, that's Johnny's parents. So what we say is you're not a secret agent. Know their parents and be known by their parents. We'll talk about this in a second. So that's the first thing is do your parents know who you are? Have you reached out? Have you sent an email? At our parish, we have a general email that we would send as a youth minister to all the parents. We found it much more effective when our small group leaders sent an email. So the youth minister would write a template, right? It's their job. They would write a template. And then we'd have a little section about, and this is what happened in our small group this week. Small group leader just has to fill in that template. If you have Flocknote, anyone have Flocknote at their parish?
Love it.
Sponsor us, Flocknote, on our podcast. Flocknote, you can set this up really easily where the youth minister can drop in the template and all you have to do as a small group leader is log in and then fix that little part, right, where the little section is about your small group leader. And we found parents interacting so much more with that, right? They never read those newsletters, but when they when there's an email about their kid's small group that says something about what happened in their kid's small group, not the night, their kid's small group, they're like, wow, thanks for sharing about that about me, sharing that with me. So we found that to be really effective. So don't be a secret agent. Honor thy father and mother. As small group leaders, as we, when you partner with parents, when you're a small, I talk way too much. I apologize. When you partner with small group, when you partner with parents, you're partnering with them. You're not there to be a kid in your small group's parent. They are the parent. We need to partner them. We need to honor with them. We're not speaking against their parent, even if they're. It's hard. It's very hard. Right? Even if their parents like, well, my dad's an atheist. Okay, I'm not going to say your dad's right in this situation, but he is also your father, and that's an important role. You know, when you start partnering with them, when you start collaborating and talking with them, then you can make sure as well that you have their side in that small group. Okay, it doesn't mean that you say whatever your parent says is always true 100%, but you also say respect your parent. You know, you're not there to demean their parents in any way. So I got to keep moving. So that last one, compliment and compliment. So compliment and compliment. Number one, compliment the parents. How can you be an advocate for the parent in the small group? How can you work on with what they're doing? If you're reaching out to a parent, if you're emailing them, or if you give them a call, that's the next level. Call your parents once a semester or once a quarter just to connect, hear how they're doing, and kind of ask that question. What's going on in Johnny's life? What is there anything I can help with? Is there anything I should know about? Be their advocate. Help them. Compliment them. Be a compliment to them. And then number two, compliment. We should be telling parents how great their kids are. Or, hey, because they all are great. And sometimes they're, you know, high schoolers and their brains fully haven't developed yet. But they are great. So we need to be complimenting the parents. One thing we say is that when a kid and a parent, when you see them out in the wild or after mass, our instinct often as youth ministers is to talk to that kid. I got this moment to talk to the kid. I need to connect with them. We would say, let that be an impact thing outside of church. Let that be an intentional thing you're doing, or you're going to see him in a small group. When you have the kid and the parent, say hi to the kid, but then talk to the parent. This is your opportunity to connect with that parent. Because what do we say? They are the primary catechist. But so often, we put them aside. We believe as small group leaders in a youth ministry, you need to be partnering with them and allow them to be those primary formators. Because here's the thing. They are the primary formators. They are. They're forming their kid the most. You know, if you have 52 weeks, you meet every week a year for 2 hours, which that's, you don't do that. But if you did, that's 110 hours. I did that. No. Yes. No. Whatever. It's some amount of time.
Somebody do the math.
104.
104. Got it. Times two. Wow. Great.
It was all that calculus work.
I can't do the calculus. No. Jake. So 104 hours compared to how many hours in a year a parent spends with their kid, they are the formators. Whether we like it or whether they're forming what we want them to form or not, they are the formators. So we need to begin partnering with them to help them be the formators God is calling them to be.
Cool. So we've talked about, oh, sorry, I didn't even leave room for
one
you guys.
I got one clap.
It's because I cut you off.
You win, Jake.
That's a pity clap. That's what that is.
I'll take a pity clap.
Wow, we do get along so well. So now that we've talked about the first two things, you are showing up and you are partnering with parents. We're going to get into the meat. Oh, I'm feeding back. You're feeding. Anyway, we're going to get into a little bit of the meat of what you want to do in those small groups. So the point of what you need to happen there is this. You need to cause dialogue. You two, stop fighting. You want to cause dialogue. So sometimes you hear this thing. I'm sure that you have heard it or you've heard your small group leaders hear it. We have definitely heard people say this. I just don't know how to get them to talk, right? Or they're like, I'm asking all, you know, I prepped all these questions. I thought exactly what I wanted to say. I gave a fantastic talk, and I gave them all these beautiful questions, and they were silent.
Jerks.
That is the first thing you don't want to say. So we're going to give you some tips on some things that you can do, some things that you can say, and the ways in which to think about that, and start to make this a dialogue between them. You want to make sure that there's authentic conversation happening, not just comments here and there or the dreaded yes, no, or how you doing? Busy. Good. Me too. I forgot to feed the rabbits. I'm going to go. You know, you're like trying to get out of that conversation. Like, if you, the more that you can master this technique, the better it will be, the easier it will get. And it does take time. So especially for your first year small group leaders or those that are just starting out in that ministry, be okay with the fact that this is going to take a little bit of time. It's going to take a little trial and error, but hopefully we can help you get through that. So those three things that we want to do to help you do this best is set the tone. So that means you're giving expectations when you get into your small group. You're telling the kids the things that they should and should not expect from this time. Maybe you develop some sort of routine or prayer experience. I know I had a small group one time. It was all sixth grade girls. And the beginning of every gathering, they wanted to do intentions, just together. We did high, lows, and intentions. And maybe that's something that you guys do. Maybe that's something that they don't do. The guys don't seem to love that as much. I'm not a guy. I don't get it as much. But the girls loved that. They loved being able to share what was going on in their worlds, what was going on in their lives, and how they could ask other people for prayer. And so that was something that we always started our group with. It set the tone in prayer. It set it in a serious way. And they were able to feel heard and loved and paid attention to. So that was a good thing. So set that expectation. The next thing you want to worry about in that tone is also your environment. Kids are in a classroom so often. If you can do anything, get them out of the classroom setting. If that's the only place you have to meet, try to think of a way to make it a little bit more inviting, a little bit more welcoming. We have our eighth graders meet in one of the classrooms. We have kids all over the school and the parish. But our eighth graders are in there, and they wanted to think about how can we make this more inviting for our girls. And so they call it the nest. They come into this classroom, and it becomes the nest. They have Christmas lights that they put up. They put out a tablecloth on the floor. They move the desks to the side. They have a candle that they light every week. They bring baked goods. You know, they make it somewhere that they want to be. So as soon as they walk into that room, they're not thinking, oh, I have algebra in here. Ugh. They walk in there and say, oh, yeah, this is where we talked about the real things that are going on in my life. This is where the people show that they cared about me. This is where I am welcome. It's free from distractions. You want to get all those things out of the way. And if you can, get them all on the same level. Sometimes if there's chairs, someone's in the chair, someone's on the floor, someone's sitting on a desk, someone's behind you. But if you're all on the same level, leaders included, it becomes more of an equal playing field. Because then it's not like we're looking up to you as the leader and we're going to wait for you to lead us. Because what you want to do in a dialogue is you want it to be just that. It is not me talking to them. This is not my time to shine. This is not, I came, I saw, I catechized. You know, you want to let them have a chance to dialogue. If the students are talking to each other, that is your pudding. I don't really like pudding, so if you don't like pudding, insert your favorite dessert there. But that is what you want to be seeing, is when they're not just asking you questions and waiting for you to answer them, but you are sparking authentic dialogue between the students. So this happens sometimes when they ask tough questions, that immediately you feel the need to jump in there and answer it. So this is the second point, speaking the truth in love, is when you ask tough questions, you have to expect them to ask you tough questions. And so the other week I had one of my sixth graders, we were sitting down, we just talked about the anointing of the sick and, you know, the whole process and what that looks like and last rites and how that's different. And she looked at me and she was like, so this is a little off topic, but can my non-Catholic friends get to heaven? And of course I said, no, I'm just kidding. But I said to the group, I said, what do you guys think? I didn't jump on the answer. I knew it. I know what I wanted to say to them, but I wanted to see what they thought. So I posed it. I said, what do you guys think? You know, so their friends started chiming in and saying what they think. And I said, okay, well, why do you think that? Or where did you hear that? You know, tell me about those friends and all those sorts of things that we were able to workshop it instead of me just sitting there and telling them. It was a great conversation, and they all walked away with the right answer, but kind of from themselves, you know, and it wasn't just me jumping on their case and correcting them. If someone says, no, they don't go there, I wasn't gonna be like, wrong. You know, you have to find a way to speak that truth in love. You need them to know that they love you, even if you are correcting something that they might misunderstand from what you're saying. So you want to really just get to the heart of what they're trying to say, maybe in those questions or hard things, and that will work. The other thing is, like I said, speak when necessary. That was that whole piece of advice on not always jumping in right away. This last part is ask great questions. Again, you might be like, wow, guys, I came in here for you to tell me something really obvious. But we see this as a great example from Jesus. Throughout the Bible, Jesus asks us 307 questions. I was like, you're both here. He asks us 307 questions. He is asked only 187, of which he only answers three. So if we take that method, we should be asking much more than we should be answering. We should be trying to push them in that direction for that. This is not a lecture. This is not a presentation. This is where you want them to be chiming in on what you are saying. You are the catalyst for that. I had a small group leader one time who she was saying, like, I want to be able to know these kids. I want to be able to ask these better questions. I want to be a better small group leader. And do you think that we could get notebooks so that I could take notes after our small group to remember what we talked about and remember what these kids need and remember the questions that they ask? Because sometimes they ask things and I don't know and I need to go and look it up. And I loved that. She was a little nervous in sharing that because she was like feeling like she might be a bad small group leader. I don't know all these answers. I don't know what to say to them. But that was awesome. So after the small group, every time she would pull out that notebook, she would take some notes on different things, and she made a difference. Those kids still go to her even though they're not in her small group anymore. They still talk to her. They still want to be a part of that because she asked great questions. She listened to them. As an extrovert, surprise, maybe you couldn't pick that up, I have a hard time listening at times, talk to my poor husband. I just sit there and I chat and I chat and I chat and I chat. So when I have to tell other people to listen well, that's a thing that I also have to work on. So when someone's telling me a story, I'll just say, oh, tell me more. Okay, tell me more. Tell me more. And through that, you start to get deeper and deeper into what they need. But you have to be able to listen. Asking great questions involves listening. And the final part of that is you want to make sure you follow up. So sometimes that's a follow-up question to the first question. So somebody says, how are you feeling? I'm busy. Don't stop there. Say, oh, really? What's going on? Oh, well, I've got a chemistry test, and I have to cross-country meet tomorrow, and my parents just won't stop fighting. You're like, oh, really? Are you okay? Tell me more about that. How's life at home? And you keep going and you're going, and it goes from busy to one of the most authentic things that can happen. So you need to follow up on those questions and follow up with those kids. So the next week, if they share something, ask them about it. Continue the conversation. The conversation does not start and end in one night. When you come back that next week, ask them how their basketball game went. Hey, how'd you do in your basketball game last week? Their eyes will get really big because they won't know that you remembered them. And you're like, oh, that was great. It was actually really, really great. So in all of this, remember that the Lord gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. You should be listening more than you are talking. And that will help you to cause dialogue.
Our next principle, and I would say this is like a principle Belding, right? Maybe a principle Feeney from Boy Meets World. This is a pretty great principle. And it's called be, no one got the joke. It's okay. Thank you. You could have laughed. It would have made me feel better. But be a follower. Be a follower. That small group leaders follow a savior and set boundaries. And we're all about leadership, and we want people, we call them small group leaders, we want to be leaders, but first they have to be followers. If there's any principle that is like, oh, these are five, I only want to concentrate on one, this is number one. Number one is that they are followers of Jesus Christ. That the small, you're not getting a parent who doesn't, I don't know if I really want to follow Jesus. I'm Catholic, but I don't know if I want to follow Jesus. Think about that one for a second. But I'll do this. I'll do this because I want to help my kid. Now, once again, we want to partner with them. That's great. We want you around. Let's continue that conversation. But that person, I don't know if they're ready to be a small group leader, right? Small group leaders need to be followers of Jesus Christ. And followers sometimes are more important than leaders. There's a YouTube clip that internet is awesomely slow here, so we weren't going to show up. But there's an internet clip. It's called TED, How to Start a Movement, okay? TED, How to Start a Movement. If you haven't seen that one before, it's amazing. And it's this video of a guy at a concert, and he's dancing like I dance, crazy. And everyone's like, you can tell, like, everyone's, it's just funny. Looks like a weirdo. But then one person comes and starts dancing with him. And then you see over the next, like, 30 seconds that just more and more people come. And that crazy person in the beginning was a weirdo, but when someone joined them, when someone was a follower of them, it made it okay. It made it okay. And You know what? Jesus, I'm not going to say he's a weirdo, because that, I don't know where the heresy meter goes in that one, but he's out there. Like, the things he says, the life he calls us to is kind of out there. It's awesome. It's epic, but it's crazy, especially within our culture. And are we the followers? Are we the people that the kids can relate to that we, I mean, in a way, normalize, make it, yeah, I can do this. I can follow Christ because that person follows Christ. That's why you also need to be a follower of Christ because that's our call. But as being a small group leader, that's why it's also important. If you're not a follower of Jesus, you're not like, well, I don't really follow that guy, but you should. You should follow. I'm busy. I'm an adult. I'm a parent. You'll understand when you're older. But you should now. You should do it. So number one is be a follower of Jesus. That is extremely important. Number two, don't follow alone. If you're a disciple of Jesus, the way in which you become a disciple of Jesus when we're talking about this is not through your youth ministry. You should be a disciple of Jesus whether you're involved in youth ministry or not. The way in which you become a disciple of Jesus is not just because you come to youth ministry on Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whenever it is. Okay, you're a follower of Jesus all the time, and we say you need a community that is not your small group leader. If you say, well, I get more out of these nights than the kids do, no.
Yikes.
I'm not saying you can't get things out of it. Please, don't understand me. I'm going to say you're a robot with no emotions and you don't like your kids. But it's not about you. This conference, I'm sorry to tell you, is not about you. Your role here is accompany youth. You should be asking questions after these sessions. How was it? What was it? What did you think? Were you bored? Are you tired? Are you sleepy? Have you eaten? Tell me. Let's talk. I'm accompanying you here. This is a great, if you haven't done small group leadership, this is a great time to start it. Maybe you're not doing a small group, but it's not about the program. It's about the people. You can have these principles here this weekend. You can start these things, okay? But when we say don't follow alone, you have to find a community that's supportive to you. Now, maybe it is those small group adult leaders, but you're not just doing it that night. Maybe you meet at another night as a community of believers to strengthen one another. You know, if you're a youth ministry leader, maybe you're having your small group leaders and your volunteers find places of nourishment and formation programs. Maybe you don't have it at your parish. Maybe there's no adult faith formation or adult group program like that. Maybe you can start it. You know, because if you get people into that aren't in youth ministry, you know where's a good place to find small group leaders? That group. Because you know the disciples. You know they're nourished. You know they got the right thing in mind. And they know what small groups are like. Finally, understand boundaries. When you're a follower as a small group leader, and I know this is if I sound like a jerk, I apologize, but maybe I'm a jerk. Small group leaders are followers of the ministry. You need to follow the ministry. This ministry is not about you. Now, hopefully, if this has been done right, the ministry is under the guise of the pastor who ultimately, it doesn't say anywhere in canon law how the small group leader is responsible for the souls of the people there. It says the pastor, okay? And so hopefully this ministry is under the vision of the pastor, and we're following that, and you need to follow that. Now, believe me, saying that is extremely difficult. I have worked for many wonderful priests in my lifetime, and I've worked for some other guys. And, okay, you saw where I went with that. But they're all men, ordained, and they have a calling, and they have a responsibility. And I don't understand their life all the time, and they don't always, but we're there to follow that ministry vision. So if you're a part of this, and maybe small group leadership is not at your parish right now, and you want it to be, the thing you don't say is, like, at a youth ministry night, you don't say among everyone, you know what really should be doing is, no. You have the conversation with the leader afterwards. You know what? I love what we're doing. I love coming here. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'd love to talk to you about what I'm really excited about and passionate about. And then giving it up to them, to the Spirit, to where the Spirit is moving. Because we're not here to solve the issue in a day, a week, a month. We're here to solve it long term. We're here to do something over a long period of time, which really leads us to our next, right?
Oh, it does.
Okay, great. Yes, I nailed the transition this time.
Are you the first one to go on that one, or is it me?
Okay, great. It leads us to our next one, which is called play. Thank you. Wow. I am Woo! The king of pity claps. It's called play the long game. Okay, we are playing the long game here, people. We are not trying to solve the world in 6 months. We are not trying to, we have to teach them all about Catholicism until we confirm them, and then we've lost them forever. Probably if you're trying to put everything in 6 months, you probably lost them. I mean, Jesus himself took 3 years. The Son of God took 3 years to form his disciples into apostles and the Spirit coming down, right? Jesus took 3 years. We think we can do it intentionally in
5 hours.
Yeah, exactly. So play the long game. We have to remember that we here are aiming for lifelong discipleship. We want to create lifelong disciples, not just people in our ministry, not people who come back every Sunday. We want people who are building the church on earth so that we can bring more people to heaven with us. That's what we're about. Let's not get distracted out of that message. So when we talk about, we break down that, those principles, I get a little excited. I apologize. I'm a little loud. But
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Can I see my notes? Because I'm just.
I would love to. That's not yours.
Okay. I don't want to talk about your points.
Well, that's it's both. It's the bottom and then the top.
Oh my gosh.
Do, 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 do.
Number one, Alpha and the Omega. So we advocate for long-term small groups, long-term, multi-year.
How long, Paul?
Very long, 60 years or more. No, we would say if you're in high school, you should be looking at having small groups for four-year, the same small group together for 4 years. If you're in middle school, we would say 2 or 3 years for that small group together. And when you start doing that, your goals are different. You're not trying to make everyone friends and happy by the second night. You're thinking, well, I've got 4 years to do this. I got 4 years to get there. Now, I promise you that is crazy. It's a crazy long commitment. I was in a small group. We had a parent program called the Godparent Program. And we did it for 4 years. We went to the same couple's house for 4 years. Now, everyone, we have four nuns, a bishop, and a priest from that small group. That's not true. I just lied to you. You're like, what, a bishop? How old are you? It was a diverse small group. They're not all, and now some are struggling with their faith. Some have moved away from the faith. But I have that relationship with them. I can connect with them. I and some of the other people are in there. We have that connection. We see them. We're right there. Now I've moved away, but your goals change and the relationships deepen when you're able to play the long game. This year is not everything. It's only 1 year in a much longer life of discipleship. Small groups are effective when you play that long game, thinking about that long-term vision. So there are ways to do this, even if you don't have small group ministry at your parish. So maybe you're someone who are saying like, hey, look, I tried this and this can't happen. Or you're someone who's like, I want to do it, but I'm having trouble finding people who want to make this term commitment. What I would say is start advocating for some of the principles we're talking about without starting a small group ministry program. Start having those principles and putting, like, for example, if you only have small groups for a year, let's say it's preparation for confirmation. What you should be advocating to your small group leaders, or if you're that confirmation catechist, is that you're going to be connecting them as you go down the road. Let's say you have a group of 10 that you're entrusted to. That's too many, like I said earlier. But you got a group of 10. At the end of that year, you want to, if you're that small group leader, keep connecting with them. Pray for them. Make a point to run after them after Mass. Make a point to, if you can, if you're able to, maybe stand in the back if you know they're one of those who, leave early. That you're there not to judge them like, Mass goes, did you get the blessing? You didn't get to go back for the blessing. You don't say that, but rather just like happy to see them. Hey, how you doing? How are things? Is school going well this year? Oh, great. Well, it's great to see you. See you again. Or sending them a card on their birthday. This is crazy. If you know their birthday this year, for most people, it is the same day next year. So you have that, and you can send them a card. And even when they're older and they go to college, send the card to their house. Their parents will get it to them. If they're 20, I mean, I am talking long term here, people. If you've got someone you were a small group and 20, they're a 30-year-old and you don't, send their parents a card, God willing, if they're still with us, so hopefully they are. They'll send it to their kid, and that will make an impact. And you're not sending it because I hope they come back to the church. You're sending it because you love them. You love them. Okay, so even if you don't have a small group ministry, you can be doing these things. There is no excuse for us to be doing it. It's hard. I'm not saying it's not hard, but we can do it.
Cool. Sorry. That's okay. Good job, Paul. So the second thing is the source and the summit. We want to make sure that they are staying focused on what is truly important in our faith. So we see the sacraments, we see the Eucharist, we see the liturgical life as extremely important. And if you don't share that that needs to be the center of their lives, the long game is going to be much harder. Because if instead of feeling connected to our Lord and Jesus Christ, if they instead feel connected to the parish or to the people, bad news. They're going to leave you at some point. They're going to go to college. They're going to take a gap year. They're going to move away. They're not always going to be in your ministry. They're not always going to be in your small group. So what do you need to have them understand when they leave you is that right there. If they don't understand the power of the Eucharist and the beauty of reconciliation and all of these things that pull at us to take us away from our faith, then we're going to have a much harder time. So this, if you can do this well and your kids leave knowing that, you have done a good job. Give yourselves a pat on the back if they leave knowing this. It's good to normalize them. Have these things present constantly. That it's not something that you just make a big deal about here and there, but it's something that's normal. Because if it's normal in your ministry, it becomes normal in their lives. Routine. We know that everyone loves a good routine. You don't have to make yourself a note every day to brush your teeth before bed, probably. You just do it. It's something that you do that is normal, that is accepted. So when they start to see this more often, it's going to make an impact longer. So we have a couple things that we do that we'll be doing actually in 2 weeks with our middle schoolers is we always pair up with the Advent penance services and the Lent reconciliation, all those different things.
Unleavened service.
All right, you too. Yes, but we will join that to our ministry night. So we come in, we have one of our high schoolers give a witness on reconciliation in their lives, and then we all go and we join the parish in that sacrament. So it is a normal thing. And anytime that we have adoration, the kids are always like, man, can we do that more? You know, they're understanding the beauty of these things, but it has to go beyond that even too. It can't just be that they're having these experiences in adoration or they won't understand Christ. They have to know Christ through all of that. And this will show them their discipleship. This will make them be a better disciple. In Lumen Gentium, the encyclical, the 11th paragraph, when you get in there, that talks all about the necessity of the sacraments in being a disciple.
Seriously, look that up.
You should. You should write that.
Section 11 of Lumen Gentium, that's when you're talking about how does this look like in your life, right there. It's a beautiful, beautiful paragraph.
It is. It is lovely. And Fulton Sheen, Venerable Fulton Sheen, who's actually going to be beatified in Peoria, Illinois in December. Whoop, whoop. One of my favorite quotes that he shares is he says, the greatest love story of all time is contained in a tiny white host. You know, in our world, when these kids, they're searching for something, they want to be fulfilled by something, they don't know what their hunger and thirst comes from. The Lord comes to them and says, I am the bread of life. Those who come to me shall not hunger. They can be fulfilled through all of these things, and we don't always recognize it as the most important because we think, oh, my talks are important or this retreat is important. All of these things are important, but not as important as this. And if they get this, that's important because Jesus goes with them and we don't.
All right, last thing, link community in real life. Julia was talking about if you can connect students instead of your youth ministry community, you connect them to the sacraments and the liturgy, that's a big win. And I'm not going to lie, we've been a little dejected about this at our parish right now. We feel like we do all this work to connect with students, to build relationships, to partner with parents. We put them in leadership roles. They develop really well, and we feel great about them as they exit high school. And then one semester of college happens, and it's like it's out the window. And it's really hard because we've tried to do these things to really genuinely love and care and raise these people in faith. And these things happen. But these sorts of things, if we're really playing the long game, that's the thing we can do to help prevent those sorts of things from happening. So connecting them to the sacraments of the Source and Summit is important, but also to linking them to community in real life. And we've been giving you a lot of things that might make your life more difficult, but this one is actually easier. So if you want to do really effective small group ministry and play the long game, you should not create all new stuff all the time. And that instead, you should just be connecting young people to the things that you're already connected to parish life, to your communities, to the activities that happen there. And if that's the regular part of your faith that sustains you, it's awesome to invite them into some of those things. I had a confirmation group that I was mentoring this past year, and I mentioned, we had Holy Week and the Triduum coming up, and I put it out there. I said, I'm going to be at all the Triduum celebration, and would you like to come to Holy Thursday or Good Friday or the Easter Vigil? And they chose the Easter Vigil, which I was kind of surprised. I said, you know, that's the long one, right? And I said, yeah, well, we've never been there. We wanted to try it out. And so they got dressed up, and they joined me at the Easter Vigil, and it was me and my family and the group that I usually go with. And as things were happening, I was explaining it. You know, we got a light show and candles and fun stuff that goes on there.
Like lasers. And your parish has lasers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Just joking.
No. And it was awesome. So I got to do this thing that I always do, but I invited them to be a part of it, and they got to see that regular routine. We normalized it in some way, but I think just showed them, we gave them a little bit of imagination. We said, what could this really look like? If you were an adult in the faith, let me give you some imagery of what that's like. It's going to this liturgy. It's going out to serve in the community. It's inviting them to be a part of the faith communities that you're a part of. They are apprenticing you if you are a small group leader. It's less of your leading that one little small group talk at the end of your youth ministry night that you give them 15 minutes to somehow dive into. And it's more of, let me show you what I've learned, and hopefully you'll pick up something from that as well. And that needs to go outside of the usual youth ministry night. Like, if you want faith to extend beyond youth ministry, then small groups also have to extend beyond ministry. So these are our five principles that we've talked about, and we want to give you just a couple things to think about. And some questions to ask. So we're wondering, back to our original questions, if there are obstacles, but also, what do you relate to? What do you think are big stretches? And what are things that you could actually commit to, whether it's on NCYC or in your ministries going forward? Again, we're not saying start an entirely new small group ministry. We're just saying focus on what long-term small groups look like for your people. So we would love to hear about this from you. What sorts of things do you relate to? What things are a challenge? What do you think about this?
I'll run on this
side. Yeah. So here's just a way, if you're playing the long game, right? If you brought those leaders who are having trouble coming regularly and ask, what can you commit to right now? What could you make a once a month thing on your calendar no matter what or whatever? Could you do that? Is it twice a semester? Now, granted, we want to be meeting with them consistently. We want to consistently show up. But sometimes we need to be able to take a step back and say, where can we start this process and move it forward? So maybe not everything in your program becomes that small group principle, but there's one part of it that you start to intentionally doing that. And when you see the effectiveness of that showing up, and what if we did this more? And you start slowly going that way. It's one way to do it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I think that can they be leaders? Yes. Can they be... Are they exact same kind of leader and mentor as an adult?
No,
they're not. So I think you have to put them in the position where they can be leaders. Number one, obviously, you have to form them. But I think you want adults in the roles that we've been talking about today. Everything that we've been saying is with adults in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there can be disciples. I mean, youth are called to be disciples and missionary disciples, as the nuncio was talking about this morning in his brief talk. But we need to put them in the right places to do that. I know that's not a specific question, but yes, I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, so for us at least, so I work with our middle school ministry a lot, and we have our upperclassmen that help lead those small groups. So that's a really great place for them. We also have adults in all of those groups, but we have some high schoolers in there as well. So they're kind of being mentored by the mentor while they're mentoring the middle schoolers, if that makes sense. Because the middle schoolers are the weirdest humans I've ever met. I love them. That's why I work with them. They understand me. I understand them. It's all good. But the high schoolers also understand them because they're closer to their age. So that's a really, really effective place for high schoolers to lead, is with those that are just a couple years off from them. But then in addition, having an adult there that is more of the trustworthy source, if you will.
But some of these principles do apply.
Yes.
So like, be a follower. You should be talking to these high schoolers. Like, if they want to be a small group, because sometimes high schools want to be small group leaders because it's cool. They want to be a leader because they're a leader in school and they're the president of this. Mm-hmm. And we're like, yeah, it's cool and you're going to be a leader. But like, number one is, you're a follower of Jesus. Are we committed to that? So that's a great opportunity to have those conversations.
All right. Question over here. Go ahead.
Actually, it was on the same point I was going to Sure. On the same vein is that in our church, in our parish, our we have like a core group of adults that, you know, it's, we've established small groups for a while. So we have our core group. And then when we try to bring in new people who maybe have that, where they say, oh, I'm not qualified, I can't do that, I'm not, we have two adults or two leaders per group, so that one, you, if one can't show up, there's always the other one. And then that second one is kind of one's mentoring the other. So we, like our college students that have gone through the program, come back and say they want to be small group leaders, then they come in and they'll partner with one of the core adults. And then we use, you know, they'll be in the program for a while, and then they'll go on and start their own small group, and it kind of, you know, moves, rolls on that way. So that's.
So we thank you for your feedback. We were going to be up here. You know, we want to be respectful of your time because you've got other youth out there. You got other workshops you got to get to. We just wanted to take one moment to once again kind of talk about who we are.
If you have questions, we'll stay after that. We'll be here. So you come.
We have no lives. Yeah. We have no lives.
Speak for yourself, brother. But we will be here to talk with you afterwards. So if you have some of those questions, please come see us. But carry on.
Yeah, so we are, like we said earlier, we have a podcast, Pizza and Side Hugs. You can find it on iTunes. You can just search Pizza Side Hugs. We have some cards we want to give away with business cards with that, with our website on there. That'll take us to the website that has all that. We've had this podcast for about 2 years, and we're rebooting it because we did it. I used to work for a different diocese, and that was part of my job. And they've actually let me keep the name, but we had to start another feed. So the reboot, as we call it, the reboot, only has one episode. The two will be dropping in the next week or so, two more. So we'll have three there. But the old one is still up. So there's 25 episodes that are there that, and the last five of them go through these. And you think we can't talk more, we go deeper into these as well. Also, as we test on our cards, our email's on there. This isn't a business, but if you know, sometimes it's easier for someone from the outside who's an expert because they drove an hour or because they flew on a plane, then these people must know what they're doing. If you want us to come out and talk with your small group leaders, we would love to do that. Or your people at your ministry about small group leadership, we would do that. We have more time, we could do more activities, all that sorts of stuff. We'd love to do that. I'm here in the Archdiocese of Annapolis, Director of Youth Ministry, and that's my job, is to support youth ministers and pastors at parishes. So thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, everyone.